This series by UBS is presented by Automated Voices and may include adaptive narration.
Hi, I'm Anna from the UBS Chief Investment Office. It's Friday, the 26th of June, and the time is 7:30 a.m. in New York. Global equities saw mixed results today. At the latest close on Wall Street, the S&P 500 is flat and the Nasdaq is up 0.8%. In Europe, the Stoxx Europe 600 is down 0.4%, while Switzerland's SMI is down 0.1% there. In Japan, the Nikkei 225 is down by 4.2%. In foreign exchange, 1 euro buys 1.138 US dollars and 1 US dollar buys 0.81 Swiss francs. Brent crude is down 2.1% at $74 a barrel, and gold is up 1% at $4,031 an ounce. And that's all for the market update. Now let's take a more detailed look at the latest developments.
Thanks, Anna. And staying with commodities for a moment, what's behind the latest weakness in oil prices, even after that reported attack in the Strait of Hormuz?
Hi, Daniel. Well, oil prices remain under pressure on Friday, even after a reported projectile attack on a container ship in the Strait of Hormuz. A Singapore-flagged vessel was hit by a suspected drone during passage through the waterway, and that marks the first such recorded attack since the U.S. and Iran signed an interim peace deal last week. Even so, Brent crude was trading 2.2% lower at $73.6 a barrel at the time of writing, and that leaves prices near levels last seen before the war broke out in late February.
So, what's been driving that steady decline in prices?
Well, the move lower actually started around mid-May before the deal was signed because optimism over an imminent agreement reduced the urgency for refineries to secure additional barrels. China's use of its own strategic inventories and record U.S. exports have also kept the market better supplied. At the same time, Saudi Arabia and the UAE use their pipelines to bypass the Strait of Hormuz and limit the drop in exports from the Gulf. Since the peace framework was agreed and the blockade was lifted, stranded ships in the waterway have also become available and added new supply. Data showed Iran has managed to export around 40 million barrels of oil since last week, while about 30 million barrels came from non-Iranian Gulf floating storage. Industry estimates also put the amount of oil still trapped within the Gulf at between 50 million and 100 million barrels, and the release of that oil could add further pressure in the near term.
And yet, despite lowering your forecast, you still think the market is underestimating the rebound from here.
Yeah, that's a key point. We have lowered our oil forecast to reflect the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, but we think the current price level overestimates how quickly traffic through the waterway will normalize and how quickly shut-in production will recover. Our expectation is that Brent crude returns to $85 a barrel by the end of this year. A full return of shipping confidence will take time. Iran has not claimed responsibility for the latest episode, but it follows a warning from Iran's Revolutionary Guard against ships using unauthorized routes. The UN's maritime agency also said it would pause its evacuation plans for ships stuck in the Strait of Hormuz. In our view, it will take time for safety assurances and mine clearance to restore confidence fully, and only then do we see a meaningful uptick in inbound ships loading oil for export.
Right, and what are the main physical constraints that could slow that normalization?
Great question. Well, even if more ships are willing to return to the Strait, now accommodates fewer vessels than it did before the war. Instead of moving through the middle of the waterway, ships are now using two narrower routes along the coasts of Oman and Iran, and together those routes can handle fewer vessels. The recovery in production is also likely to be slower than expected because the Gulf states can only bring shut-in output back when enough non-Iran-bound tankers move into the Gulf. Tankers move slowly, and many that were diverted elsewhere still need to unload their cargo before they can return. We think that makes the production recovery process slow. Over the weekend, Iraq ordered an increase in oil production, but that was followed by another shutdown this week because there were not enough empty ships available.
So given that backdrop, how should investors think about commodities from here?
Absolutely. We expect oil prices to recover from current levels over the coming months, and we believe broad commodity exposure still offers diversification benefits in a portfolio. Energy can help buffer against renewed supply disruptions. El Niño-related risks may support agricultural commodities, and AI and electrification remain positive for industrial metals.
Great. Thanks, Anna. Now let's turn to what else caught our attention today. A key development we're watching is a slightly softer than expected US PCE inflation reading for May. Headline PCE rose 0.4% month over month, and that was below the 0.5% consensus estimate. Core PCE increased 0.3% month over month and 3.4% year over year, according to Bureau of Economic Analysis data cited by Bloomberg and CNBC. The details were mixed because core inflation is still running well above levels consistent with the Fed's 2% target. After the release, markets pared back rate hike pricing, and the amount of hikes priced by December fell to 34 basis points, which was down by around 2 basis points on the day. Fed officials still sounded cautious. Austin Goolsbee said core inflation remains too high, and John Williams called inflation unquestionably elevated. Our view is that inflation remains the key concern for policymakers, but the May PCE release supports the view that the Fed's pivot signaled at last week's policy meeting may prove less hawkish than it first appeared. The downside miss was probably too small, and core inflation still too high to settle the committee's divisions after last week's meeting. Even so, softer core details, including signs of goods disinflation, reduce the case for near-term tightening. Our base case is that the Fed stays on hold for the rest of this year and resumes easing in early 2027. We think markets are still pricing too much tightening from the Fed and other major central banks. Against that backdrop, we recommend locking in attractive yields in quality, short and medium duration bonds. Another development we're watching is the deadly record-breaking heatwave across Western Europe. It has disrupted power supply, transport, schools and public services, and it underscores the growing urgency of climate adaptation and decarbonisation. Temperatures have exceeded 40 degrees Celsius across several countries under a persistent Omega block weather pattern that can trap extreme heat for days or weeks. The episode has already had tangible economic effects, including reduced nuclear power output in France and broader disruption to infrastructure and labour activity. As climate-related shocks become more frequent, this heatwave is likely to reinforce political momentum behind decarbonisation, electrification and energy efficiency investment. Europe's strategy remains among the most ambitious globally, with the EU targeting climate neutrality by 2050 and renewable energy already accounting for around 47% of electricity generation in 2024 overall. While that strengthens the investment case for decarbonisation and is further supported by robust electric vehicle adoption trends, we believe it is only one of several structural drivers shaping Europe's long-term opportunity set. Our view is that we remain neutral on Eurozone equities overall, but still see various opportunities linked to Europe's structural transformation. Beyond decarbonisation, defence and infrastructure are emerging as key drivers of growth, supported by rising geopolitical tensions and the need to strengthen energy security and critical systems. At the same time, demographic trends, especially Europe's ageing population, are supporting long-term demand in healthcare, consumer health and luxury sectors. Financing these shifts will require deeper capital markets, and structural reforms and initiatives such as the Savings and Investment Union are aimed at mobilising private savings into productive investment. In our view, the most compelling opportunities are in European companies positioned to benefit from global trends such as artificial intelligence power and resources and longevity, as well as the region's ambitious reform agenda. A diversified approach across these themes should help investors balance risk while capturing Europe's evolving structural growth story. And that's it for today, and we look forward to bringing you the latest House View update tomorrow.
This material has been prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS Switzerland AG, regulated by FINMA in Switzerland, its subsidiaries or affiliates, collectively referred to as UBS. The investment views have been prepared in accordance with legal requirements designed to promote the independence of investment research. This material is for your information only and is not intended as an offer or a solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any investment or other specific product. The analysis contained herein does not constitute a personal investment recommendation or take into account the particular investment objectives, investment strategies, financial situation, and needs of any specific recipient. This material may not be reproduced or copies circulated without prior authority of UBS. Please visit www.ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer to read the full legal disclaimer applicable to this material.